right. Welcome back to This Week on Channel 9. I'm Brian Keller, and with us in the studio...
I'm Dan Fernandez. I'm Nick Fillingham from Channel 10. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Dan can't be here.
That's right. And actually, some sad news. We have a public service announcement from Channel 9. Dan was in a really bad car accident last night. He was he's okay. He was wearing a seatbelt. So definitely make sure you drive safely and wear your seatbelt. But as you can see from the picture here, his car was not so lucky. So
that is actually Dan's car.
It used to be. Yeah.
Yeah. So that he was very lucky. Thankfully, he's unscathed. Unfortunately, the driver is... of the other vehicle is yet to come out of hospital, but fingers crossed for everyone there.
Absolutely. So we hope Dan will be here again next week. With that, we've got a ton of news here.
We do.
And I should say that you don't work on developer tools every day, so it's a pleasure to have you join us here and
get
exposed to our crazy developer world.
And that was a very kind way of you basically saying that I don't know anything about the developer world, but I'm going to do my best to make it up and try and sound a lot like Dan.
That's right. Well, you know a lot about actually a lot of the topics we're talking about. So you know a lot about the live services.
Yeah.
Consumer world,
yeah.
And you brought in a gadget to share with us later. So, actually, let's dive right in. Maybe you want to talk about this one.
Cool. Well, announced today, the Windows Live guys are doing big updates. There's a beta currently out for Wave 3, which is lots of new the Windows Live Essentials tools, which is things like Live Writer, it's things like Mail, and also the main Windows Live website is now going to be updated. There'll be the ability to import basically a lot of your social networking sites and tools, things like Twitter and Facebook. You'll have the ability to have all of those updates really on a single page. Now, you can kind of do that already in some ways with pulling RSS feeds from here and there, but this is going to be much more integrated, a better looking, a simpler solution. It's not actually available right this second at the time of recording, but in the next couple of days, I think you'll see a lot more news about that, and hopefully, actually, if you go to Channel 10 front page, you'll actually see some screenshots and a demo of how that works.
Oh, excellent. Very cool. And so speaking of Windows Live updates, Windows Live Photo Gallery also launched.
Yeah.
So we've got the Windows Live Photo Gallery that integrates with Windows, right? How is this different?
Well, if we take a step back, Windows Vista ships with the Photo Gallery, which is actually part of the OS.
Right.
And then the Windows Live guys have released a new version of that called the Windows Live Photo Gallery. And that includes like the panoramic photo stitching and some other really cool tools as well. Now, this is an update to that. And what they actually had is on the Spaces side, if you use the Spaces on Windows Live Spaces, used to be MSN Spaces, there was a Photos little mini app, so you could actually upload photos to Spaces. There were some limitations. You couldn't actually, I think file sizes over maybe 10 megabytes weren't allowed. So that was a limited service. Now what they've done is they've created Windows Live Photos, and that's going to be integrated with Photo Gallery. So you'll be able to, you know, right-click upload to your Windows Live Photos. Online galleries, you'll be able to share with friends, and it's going to be, it's going to be similar to services that are already there, and you'll see some similarities with services like Flickr, but it's going to be a really nice complement to the Windows Live Suite, and I can't wait to try it.
Yeah, me too. And then one of the really cool features that I was just reading about here is the background color.
Can you
talk about that?
Yeah, well, I don't know who owns the actual invention of this technology, but the whole idea is to help focus on what you're looking at, whether it's a screen or on a plasma. What they do is they analyze a photo and they take an average color. What's the average of all those pixels that are on screen at the time? And it's going to be a yellow or a red or a blue or a green, some particular shade. And what they do is they actually gradient the background of that color to fading it to something like a white or a black or a gray. And the whole idea is that it kind of draws your eye into that photo that's on the page and
makes
it a lot more visible, easy to see. It's very subtle. That same effect, actually, you will see implemented, I believe, in some of the Windows 7 features when they come out a bit later on.
Sweet.
So that's kind of a really cool piece of technology to kind of just draw your eye onto what it is that's most interesting on the page.
Nice. Very cool. And then also the SkyDrive is 25 gigs now.
25 gigs.
That's incredible.
That's really cool. I thought 5 gigs was fantastic.
Yeah.
I actually haven't filled up my SkyDrive.
Yeah.
I use it all the time. I put PowerPoint presentations up there, put photos, put the odd music if, I want to listen to a song at home and I haven't got it on my PC at work. And I haven't filled up 5 gigs and now we get 25.
I think one of my home computers doesn't even have 25 gigs total.
So no, exactly.
That's amazing.
And I think if we look at, the exponential curve now of how we, getting 5 gigs now to 25, I think this time next year it's going to be 300 terabytes on Spaces.
Absolutely.
SkyDrive.
So
don't quote me on that.
Yeah, seriously.
Here we go. Now, nothing I don't know about.
Yes. All right. So, back to the developer world. Cool. So this is Small Basic, which was released to the DevLabs area of MSDN this past week, which is it's basically an implementation of BASIC. So if you grew up programming BASIC or using QBASIC, basically this guy, how many times can I say BASIC in that sentence?
40.
So Vijay Raji, he's over in the Connected Systems Division, started taking a look at this and realizing that a lot of his nephews and nieces and kids that he knew didn't really have the same platform and tool set to grow up and start programming that he did. Now, of course, you can use Visual Basic Express as a free download, Visual C Sharp Express, but those even as Express editions have a lot more functionality than when I was a kid and getting started programming. Mm-hmm. So Small Basic is a Windows application. It's a BASIC compiler, and it really gets back to the roots of the simplicity of that language. So that's really cool. Free download off of MSDN.
And would you say that primarily Small Basic is aimed at people that are learning programming from scratch? So perhaps, students, school kids,
yeah,
or people that just want to get their hands dirty and learn some new stuff?
Absolutely. Or people that just want to have fun.
Yep. It's a fun tool.
Yeah, definitely. I have a lot of fond memories of writing BASIC applications, and back in the day, you used to get these code magazines that had all of the code in the back, and you'd copy them out and then try and figure out where you misspelled something. But yeah, absolutely. I think there's any number of targets for this.
And how small is Small Basic?
I don't know. I have to go back and
can it fit in my new 25 gig?
I would hope so. I would hope it would fit on your SkyDrive.
It's smaller than that?
I would think so.
Sweet.
So, Windows Mobile 6 emulator. This is a story you found.
Well, I just read this today on the front page of Channel 10. Sarah Perez, who's one of our commentators, she's based in contributors, I should say. Sorry, Sarah. She's based in Tampa Bay, in Florida, which is your home.
Yeah,
state.
That's right where I'm from. I actually grew up right just south of Tampa.
And they lost the World Series. I don't know what happened.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
No, won that. No?
Recount.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, it's Florida. We don't settle those things right away.
Oh, okay. Oh no, I was talking about the baseball.
Yeah.
Who's the Rays or something?
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
They're recounting that?
No, I'm kidding. That was a reference to the Florida election. And
I know nothing about
everything.
American sports, or that should have been a disclaimer at the start. So anyway, so Sarah talked to us about the Internet Explorer 6. They've just released an emulator for the new Internet Explorer 6 Windows Mobile. So you can actually have a look at how web pages are going to start rendering. Really cool. They've now got Flashlight support. There'll be Ajax support. There will be an implementation of Adobe Flash as well. So, the Pocket Internet Explorer, the Pi implementation, there are some limitations there in its current iteration, and hopefully we'll see some much more robust web experiences on Pi 6.
And not just web applications either, because you can also build WinForms applications, Compact Framework applications.
That's right.
This integrates right within Visual Studio, so that if you want to see what your application would look like on a Windows Mobile 6 device, you don't have to have a hardware. You can just boot that right up within the emulator.
Yeah, so full disclaimer, I haven't actually seen this. I read Sarah's post this morning. Is it Sarah's? Actually, that was Larry Larson's.
Yeah.
Oh, it was Larry.
Yeah.
Sorry, Larry, but I'm going to give Sarah credit for that, because she writes a lot of good stuff.
She does.
But check out Channel 10. I think it's on the front page now if you'd like to learn more. And I think there's also some videos of that in action as well if you kind of follow through the links.
Excellent. Good stuff. Windows Mobile 6. So last week we talked about how some of the new Hello World getting started applications and tutorials are starting to come up around the Azure Services platform. So here's another one that is for the LiveFX application. So if you wanted to write your first LiveFX application, here is kind of a getting started sample that does a really simple. I think it queries whether or not one of your contacts is online.
Right.
So that's very cool. Next up, DevExpress. So this is one that Dan was really excited to be here to talk about.
So I have to be really excited about this, right?
Yeah, so you have to pretend that you're Dan.
But I'm not going to talk about it because I'm so excited, I'm lost for words.
Absolutely, speechless. But this is free. This is from DevExpress. Okay. They make a lot of great developer tools and add-ins for Visual Studio.
Right.
But to kind of get you familiar with their brand, I guess they're giving this away for free. Basically, it's full of code refactorings. So, Visual Studio 2005 and 2008 shipped with a number of code refactorings, help you refactor your code. Mm-hmm. But we only do,
I love a good code refactoring.
Yeah, well, I know. You were just talking about this.
Friday afternoons, man. That's all we do.
I think Visual Studio ships with maybe 10 or 12 code refactorings. The really popular ones, right? But this one adds another couple dozen code refactorings.
So if I was Dan, what were some of the things I'd be saying about this particular piece of news here?
It's really just about saving you time when you're going through and refactoring your code. So
what you're saying, it's about saving you time when you're refactoring your code?
That's what you'd be saying. So next up, so jQuery IntelliSense.
Yep.
So
this is cool. I like this.
Yeah. So we were talking about IntelliSense before, and since you're not in Visual Studio every day, I was giving you kind of an explanation of IntelliSense, how it helps you, you know, drill into a given namespace or API you're typing, right? You don't remember the name of an API you want to call, or you don't remember what arguments that API takes. Well, that's what IntelliSense helps you do.
Right.
So Visual Studio 2008 supports JavaScript IntelliSense, and because we're now shipping jQuery as part of Visual Studio, we now have an update to that IntelliSense library that you can go download, which gives you that jQuery IntelliSense as well.
Now, do we know who actually built that or who created it, in the sense that, you know, can we look forward to more IntelliSense implementations in the future for other languages?
That's a good question. Visual Studio, of course, provides the infrastructure for supporting IntelliSense for a wide variety of languages. You do have to do some infrastructure work so that your language can support IntelliSense, because it has to know about the grammar so that it knows when to actually pop up the IntelliSense query. But there's a wide variety of languages that have done that with Visual Studio already. I think this one's done by Microsoft.
Cool.
There's third-party languages. I remember the first time I played with VisualStudio.NET 2002, I installed one of the COBOL compilers for Visual Studio, and you start getting COBOL IntelliSense, and it's just, mind-blowing. Everything's all in uppercase and everything and yelling at you, so it's pretty cool. Flashback to the mainframe days.
Great, and that's on Channel 9. We can find more information about that?
All these actually we'll have links off of the main This Week on Channel 9 video. And speaking of Channel 9,
yes,
this week is...
That was my segue.
Good segue.
There we go.
This is...
Dan would have done that.
Absolutely,
Dan provides the segues.
This is Visual Studio 2010 week, and I provide the content.
Yeah.
Visual Studio 2010 week on Channel 9.
We love you, Dan.
So feel better soon, once those pain meds wear off. Visual Studio 2010 week on Channel 9. So speaking of Dan, and also Jason Olson have put together a ton of great videos on Visual Studio 2010. A lot of these are in alignment with announcements that are coming out of Tech at EMEA this week. So some of the stuff you may have seen before, but a lot of this stuff is brand new. This is a follow-on to the Visual Studio Team System 2010 week that I did back in late September. Mm-hmm. So if you go to channel9.msdn.com/Visual Studio, you'll find not only all the videos that I did, but also the new videos that Jason's posting online this week.
Great. Are there any little Easter eggs on Visual Studio Week on Channel 9? Can we find,
Easter eggs?
Is Jason in a bear suit or, Dan doing anything crazy?
Actually, it's funny you should mention that, because Jason Zander has an interesting coffee mug on his desk.
Find that video, look at the coffee mug.
That's right. Or you can just look at the comments, because people have already pointed it out. But, I think that's a pretty good Easter egg.
Cool.
So you want to talk about this?
Yeah, Dan provided some notes very kindly from his, state of recovery. and one of the things that he really liked, which I'm going to talk on his behalf, is the Time 50 Best Innovations of 2008. Now, these aren't all technology related. Some of them aren't. There were some really cool ones there. Then there's one. Number 8 is the bullets that shoot bullets, which sounds very Mad Magazine to me, but Raytheon are building this kind of missile that can be attached to a tank and can detect incoming
rounds
and basically fire this thing in advance to kill it in midair. So it's
That's
bullet
awesome.
That shoots down other bullets. I actually had a mental image of a really big bullet, and you fire that really big bullet, and then it opens up, and there's a little gun inside that, and that shoots another bullet.
That's exactly what I thought when I read the title.
The Russian doll thing? That's what I was kind of thinking of, but I think it's actually cooler. So that's kind of cool. And you were talking before, there is an implementation on tanks already.
Yeah.
Smart armor or something?
Yeah, there's smart armor, I think, and then there's reactive armor.
Reactive armor, that's it.
Reactive armor, basically, when... A lot of the anti-tank ordnance have really, really long shells that what they'll first do is they'll penetrate into the tank, and then after they've penetrated into the tank, then they'll obviously blow up because you have to pass the armor. So what this reactive armor does is it detects that one of these shells is coming in, and then it blows up on the outside, destroying the ordnance, but also protecting the mechanics and the people inside as well.
This is obviously perhaps a progression of that concept.
Yeah, definitely. Cool. Let's hope it works.
What did you see? You saw a couple on this list. What else did you like?
One of the interesting ones that jumped out at me was instant replay for Major League Baseball.
Yes.
So they actually implemented that partway through the season, which is interesting because I would have expected that to be implemented at the beginning of a season. But it's just the application of a somewhat established technology of video replay to one of America's oldest pastimes. So we got to talking about this, and you said that it's been implemented in cricket for quite some time, right?
It has. I think since the invention of the VCR which maybe back in the 70s, cricket, which is a sport not really played here in the US.
No.
But any of our British or Australian or New Zealand viewers or South African viewers would be very familiar with cricket. And they have this notion of third umpire. And if the umpires on the field, really didn't get a good view of something, specifically if it's a wicket, someone getting out, mm-hmm. They're able to kind of do this motion here, and it kind of gestures to the unseen umpire, the third umpire up in the sky watching a television, and they kind of do the rewind on the video and kind of watch it again, and they'll give you a thumbs up or a thumbs down.
They have to do the mechanical rewind?
Like yes, that? Yes. Yeah. Well, we're still in VCR in Australia. We haven't actually moved past that, so it needs a lot of maintenance, but it works.
Nice.
We've had that for a while. Now, we saw another one that was kind of good. Like, for example, the Large Hadron Collider's on there. I'm actually amazed that that's not number one, considering that, that's pretty big technology news, 2008.
Well, you've got all those people that are afraid that it's going to, like, obliterate the Earth and create a black hole and everything else, so it probably got voted down just because of that.
That's probably right.
So far, knock on wood, it hasn't done that.
That's true.
So.
And, well, that's because it's offline, because they melted it.
That's right.
Yeah, so they let the cleaners came in one night and kind of, rested their cleaning utensils down the desk and actually turned it on and it melted.
Yeah, exactly.
That's actually not a very well-known story, so you heard it here first.
People learn a lot today.
This is your pick of the week.
Yes, picks of the week. So my pick of the week is Lab Management,
cool.
Coming to Visual Studio Team System 2010. This is actually a video that I shot back in late September, and the marketing guys told me I wasn't allowed to talk about it until this week.
Cool.
So very excited to be able to talk about it now that we've disclosed it over in Tech at EMEA. And basically what Lab Management does is it's very tightly integrated with the Visual Studio Team System and Team Foundation Server. But let's say that you're a tester, right? And your job is to go out and test whether or not the software that we're building works on Windows XP 32-bit, 64-bit, and Windows Vista 32-bit, 64-bit.
Sure.
Well, today, a lot of those types of test scenarios, you would use virtualization for that. You'd spin up VPCs, and you'd go off, and you'd do your tests, and you say, okay, it works on this one, it doesn't work on that one. Lab Management effectively helps you manage all those VPCs so that you can not only snapshot the VPC and then flag it for the developer and say, hey, here's where I was able to repro that that particular bug,
right.
But you can then continue working and then branch that VPC as many times as you need. So you can have, you can find a bug and then have the developer continue to look at that while you go off and continue your tests. And it just gives you this really great capability to be able to not only help you as a tester manage the test environments you're working on, but also eliminate what we call the no repro scenario, which is, the tester finds a bug, tells it to the developer, but the developer can't reproduce that.
Right.
So now we want to allow you to actually take a snapshot so the developer can go in and say, oh, yeah, I can see you did your job right as a tester. We clearly have a bug, and then start fixing it.
So we're eliminating the no repro.
That's our goal.
This is coming. No repro will be no more after this.
Let's hope not. Yeah,
cool.
Absolutely. Or far fewer instances. Right now, it works on my machine scenario just happens far too often in software testing.
So you've got a screencast of this in action, or what?
I do.
What are you referencing here?
Yeah, definitely. So this Channel 9 video actually is an interview with Ram Shirella and Vinod Malhotra on the product team, and they. Take us through how this will work and show us a demo.
Great.
So, yeah.
Cool. And that's on the front page now, Channel 9, or we'll just go to the link?
It's on channel9.msdn.com, WAC Visual Studio.
Cool.
So, yep. And this is your first pick of the week.
Oh, my first pick of the week.
This
is very exciting.
Yeah.
So, my wife and I were trying to decide on we wanted a laptop for home, but something that was basically just going to be email and the internet.
Okay.
A little bit of online shopping, a little bit of browsing, the internet, weather, traffic, blah, blah, blah. And we settled on one of these Asus, we say in Australia, is Asus. The EEE PCs. And Brian actually thought I was stuttering when I first told him about it, but it's actually called an EEE PC. It says here on the front. This is a netbook. That's a very popular little term at the moment, netbooks.
Mm-hmm.
These little sub netbook categories, notebook categories. This is about $470 on Newegg. It's a 1.6 gigahertz Atom CPU. I think it's half a gig of memory or maybe a gig of memory. So I took that out and I put a 2 gig chip in, which was $20.
Nice.
So it's now got 2 gigs of RAM. It's a little 10-inch monitor. The battery's fantastic. It lasts for about 4 hours. But what's more exciting, at least for me, I'm just going to minimize these windows, is that I'm actually running the PDC Windows 7 build on it.
Wow.
And now this ships with Windows XP Home, which is not bad. It's a tried and tested OS. Mm-hmm. But I just thought, you know what, for laughs, I'm going to try and get the PDC build on there.
Right.
It installed in about 20 minutes.
No way.
All of the Vista and XP drivers that shipped have worked, so I've got pretty much everything installed except for one device that I'm still trying to work out, but I will crack that tonight. Mm-hmm. And I've got about four and a half, maybe five hours of battery life on this
thing.
And it's beautiful. And, you know, for those of you that were PDC and have got your hands on the PDC build of Windows 7, I urge you, if you've also got a netbook, try and get it installed, play around with it. It's fantastic. The new wireless networking interface is just a dream. It's one click from the start bar or from the taskbar on the bottom right. It allows you to see all your wireless networks. The battery life is fantastic. It's really quick. It really is fantastic. So that's $500 in your hand, $500 US. And if you have access to the PDC build, I'll leave it at that. I would highly recommend installing it on there. It's very cool. I'm also going to be doing a write-up on Channel 10 in the next couple of days of, you know, some of the things I encountered installing Win 7, the PDC build on my netbook. Just in terms of, there's no optical drive, so a slight challenge there if you're used to installing off a disk, you need to do it off a USB key, or do some funky things with the hard drive. So I just did a USB key. It was actually quite easy. Check out Channel 10. We'll probably put a link on there a bit later on.
Yeah,
and I'll let you know how I go. But highly recommend it if you have your hands on the PDC build and a netbook. It's a very nice little partnership. And this is pre-beta. I mean, this isn't even a beta build. This is like pre. Well, it's pre-beta.
Yeah.
But I think that's a sign of good things to come from Windows 7. I'm very excited.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I mean, in the past, we've always sort of accepted that in order to run the latest and greatest operating system, you're going to need a pretty beefy machine.
Yeah.
And now this seems to be a step in the other direction, which is to say just how much performance work they've done and streamlining everything such that you can pick up, you know, a $500 laptop and get everything running on a pre-beta build.
I have a Windows experience score in Windows 7. Literally, like, I installed the OS, I rebooted it, I went straight into the Windows Experience Index, ran the test, and I had a 2.9. And now, to some people, they go, that's terrible, but this is a $500 laptop.
Yeah.
And for $500 to get a 2.9 score, that's pretty awesome.
Right.
To me, that's fantastic.
And you don't even have drivers that were necessarily built for Windows 7.
Exactly. These are XP and Vista drivers.
Yeah.
So imagine when the full Windows 7 is out, drivers that are actually made for this hardware and for the OS, it's going to fly. It's going to be awesome.
Awesome. Well, we'll look forward to your post.
Great. Thanks very much.
Sounds good. So do you want to take us out here?
Oh, how do we end this? What do we do? Is there a dance?
Normally we play music, but since you have your guitar here, I just figured maybe you could take us out.
Sure. And, this is the acoustic. Well, you've got to sing.
Oh, no. There's no words
dance?
To this song.
I
can bob my head.
Okay.
Do that. We'll see you next week on This Week on Channel 9.
Bye!